All right, we are continuing our series on Hebrews chapter 11. We, of course, it's been, again, several weeks since we did this. Let's see, if you look at Hebrews 11, we did, of course, the first week, Abel and Enoch, and then, of course, we did Noah, however long ago that was. And so now we come to the next section in Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to look at Abraham part 1. Now, we're going to do 2 weeks on the story of Abraham because in Hebrews chapter 11, the Hebrew author spends quite a bit of time on Abraham. Rightfully so. He is the quote-unquote father of our faith, the founder of our faith. I guess God's the founder of our faith. He's the first one, right, that he's the instigator of this situation. So we're going to spend 2 weeks on the story of Abraham. The first week, we're going to be considering faith to go. His call to go is what the Hebrew writer talks about. And then, of course, the next week, we'll look at another section on Abraham, which is his the story of the sacrifice or almost sacrifice of Isaac. So this week we're going to begin with this first section of Abraham. Now, before we begin, I want to consider a couple of things. These are things for you to be thinking about throughout the sermon and, of course, throughout our lives. We need to be asking ourselves these questions. Number one, what has God asked us, and I have you in parentheses here, what has God asked you to do that requires faith? Now, there's the general sort of things of the Bible, right, the commands of God's word, which we understand, okay? But specifically in your life, what is God asking you to do that requires faith? In your fulfillment of God's commands, how would you fulfill them? How are you expected to obey God in a way that requires faith? Number two, what are you willing to do then, okay, if you're thinking about the ways that God expects you to have faith, what are you willing to do because of your belief in God? And as we think about this, I think there's the things that we tell ourselves, but then there's the way we live. And they're not always the same, right? We tell ourselves, oh, sure, I'd be willing to do X, Y, or Z in order because I believe in God. But then we're not doing things that are supposedly even easier than that. Sure, I'd give my life because I believe in God, but would I live my life in a way that demonstrates I believe in God? I think sometimes our line of where we would cross and where we would stay and what we're uncomfortable doing but we're willing to do anyway, I think we have to be really honest with ourselves about where that line is in our own lives. What time frame? Okay, so what things does God expect me to do that require faith? What am I willing to do because of my faith? And then what time frame am I willing to accept for God's blessings? Like, if God starts blessing me next week, is that going to be soon enough? What if the blessings don't come for a year? What if we're toiling away and the blessings don't come for 5 years or a decade? How long do you think your faith is going to sustain you? Right? That's what we're really asking here. What time frame are you willing to accept for the payoff of this faith? Because it might be until you die. Can you live with that? Can you accept that? Or do you expect there to be blessings sooner? Then finally, as we're thinking about faith, can you think of a time when someone you know demonstrated faith in their life? What did they do? What do you think required faith about it? And as we go through this sermon and the series, really, we're thinking about quote-unquote heroes of faith. I suspect there are some heroes of faith in your life that you could learn from, right? In our lives that we could learn from. Now, we're not asked to do, fundamentally, we in our society, our modern context, are not asked to do any more or less than any of the people we read about in the Bible. Now, and we may think we are, that we're asked to do, oh, we're asked to do so much more, or maybe we think, oh, we're asked to do so much less, as we're going to get to the end of Hebrews chapter 11 and the list of things that people went through, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm so thankful I don't have to go through those things, and yet I'm still asked to do fundamentally the same thing that they're asked to do. While they weren't perfect, as we know from Abraham, right, he's not perfect, but he persevered and continued in the faith. This is fundamentally what we're asked to do, right? To persevere in times of difficulty, but not just times of difficulty, times of doubt, times when it doesn't seem like the payoff is coming. When are the blessings going to come? When is the benefit going to be realized? And I have to persevere in that. Now, Hebrews 11, as we think about the story of Abraham, the first part of Hebrews Abraham's story in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations. And be mindful of this phrase, this particular phrase we're going to come back to. He was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. That's not talking about Jerusalem, though we may think in the context of the Old Testament. No, that's not what that's talking about. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive when she was past the age, since he considered him faithful who had promised. We're also going to talk about Sarah tonight in this part of the story. Since she considered him faithful who had promised, sort of, we'll talk about that. Therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. And we think about the Israelites as this nation, but of course we know the real number of Abraham's descendants as promised to him is much greater than the nation of Israel. How many people followed in the footsteps of Abraham's faith? How many people throughout history? It's a number that we'll never know. It truly is innumerable, right? So the story, we think about the story of Abraham. Let's go back to Genesis, the original story. And in all these things, in all these lessons, we're asking the same questions, right? What did Abraham, what was he expected to believe in? What part of his relationship with God required faith? What did he have to believe in specifically? What did God expect him to do because of that faith? How did that faith then manifest in a tangible way? How was his life different than it would have been because of his faith? And then ultimately, of course, what does that mean for us? So the story of Abraham, of course, we begin way over in Ur of the Chaldeans, which we don't really exactly know where that is, but we have a good idea of where it might be. Genesis 12, 1, the beginning of his story. Now the Lord said to Abram, he's still Abram at this point, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. Such a particular call. This is the beginning of this great story of the nation of Israel. Go to this place. That's it. That's pretty basic. Now, a lot of things we don't know about the story. Questions that I have. How did Abraham know about God? Maybe he had a relationship with prior. Maybe this is the first time that God talked to Abraham. We don't know. We don't know any of that background stuff. We know that his family lives over in this place. They've lived there for generations. His father lived there. Leave all that and go. And so, of course, we know that Abraham goes. I'm going to get confused between Abram. I'm just going to call him Abraham the whole time. That's what I'm going to do, because that's what he ends up as. We keep reading then in Genesis 12, 2 through 4, he's given the incentive, right? So this is the call, but there's the promise, right? The incentive that goes with this. Why would I obey you? Genesis 12, 2 through 4. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. 75 years old. Who's older than 75 in this room? You ready to go? Pick up and go somewhere you could go. Now, it's a little bit not disingenuous. It's a little bit different because we know Abram lived a lot longer than we would typically live, right? Nobody today is going to live as long as... I feel fully confident. I don't know. Maybe technology will come that far. Probably no one alive today will ever live as long as Abraham lived, right? So he's about halfway at this point in his life. So let's say 80 years. If you're 40 or older, raise your hand. Okay. All you 40-year-olds and older, you're expected to go. It's not like this is at the beginning of his life, right? It's not like he's sort of prime age here. He's advanced. Now, I say it's a little bit disingenuous, but even though he lived a lot longer than we would, he's still at the point where he can't have kids, so his aging must have been at that way. He's an old guy. He can't have kids. He doesn't think he can have kids at this point. This is part of the miracle of the faith and the promise, right? And he's going to have to trek, literally walk, although maybe he rode a camel for most of it, pack up all his stuff, and go to this place that we're told he didn't even know, really, at the beginning where he was going. He just sort of went. That's what he's asked to do, right? And so we come to the second part. We're going to skip ahead a bit in Genesis. We have the call of Abraham, faith to go. But then the second thing that the Hebrew writer mentions, right, what? That Sarah was, she gave birth, this promise. Because there's two parts to this. The first part is, hey, you need to go. And the second part is, hey, I'm going to give you a nation. You're going to have many descendants. So we read that in Genesis 17, 15 through 17. And God said to Abraham, as for Sarah, Sarai, they both had names that got changed, which is not uncommon in the Bible, right? There's quite a few people who had names that got changed to other names. As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. Have you ever thought we could do this? People who had a change in their faith, a momentous time in their life that strengthened their faith in God. Abram became Abraham, Sarai became Sarah. Of course, Saul became Paul, right? Started calling Saul Paul. Maybe when we're baptized, we should change our name. A signifier. Because what isn't that what's signified here? It is a signifier that the events that are happening in your life are transforming you. You are not the same person you used to be. Now, literally, in Abraham and Sarah and Paul's case, that was a total transformation of the way they lived, which is what it should be for us. A signifier of a transformation. That's why these names just keep getting changed. Where do we leave off? I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. I will bless her, and she shall become nations. Kings of people shall come from her. And Abram fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? So this is 25 years after the call, right? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? We sort of give Sarah a bad rap for the laughing, but note that Abraham laughs too, right? It's not just Sarah who has this initial reaction of laughing. Both of them are a little bit incredulous. Is this really going to happen? Of course, we know it does happen, right? Genesis 21, 1 through 3. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, who Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Now, this is the basics of the story. We've skipped a lot of stuff because we only have a certain amount of time. The basics of the story that's being referenced in Hebrews. He went as he was called, and he had a kid that was promised. Abraham and Sarah together. Of course, Sarah has to leave too, right? Sarah's supposedly trekking all over the world with him. Sarah, of course, is the one who's going to bear the child. So it's really a combo here. They're united in this. They both have their initial doubts about the child. They both have doubts that lead to action of doubting, as we have the whole deal with Hagar and Ishmael. And ultimately, they both have the promise fulfilled for them and this nation that's going to come from them. And so we think about this story. We're going to return again to this idea. What is faith? Hebrews 11, 1 through 3, Hebrews 11, 6. I would encourage you to memorize these verses if you haven't already. In Hebrews 11, these verses should be the core of who we are. This is about us and what it means for us, right? Hebrews 11, 1 through 3, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the people of old received their commendation. Who's the people of old? Well, Abraham and Sarah, Noah, Abel, Enoch. We've talked about these people already. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. Verse 6, and without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Now, two ideas that we draw out of this. Belief in the unseen, which in some contexts in Hebrews is this idea of the creative power of God, that the universe didn't used to exist and now it does. But really, in the way that it played out in these people's lives, the unseen future. Faith in things that I cannot know what's going to happen. I can't know what's going to happen in the future. I can make some guesses. I could get right some of the time. But the future is unknowable, except to God. So I have faith that he knows what's going to happen. I have faith that he not only knows what's going to happen, but will orchestrate things to happen the way that he promises. Which is why, what? I have to believe that he exists and he rewards those who seek him. That's a belief in the future, isn't it? A belief in something unseen, that he will reward me and them. They received their commendation. They were approved because of their faith. Faith in things they couldn't possibly know with certainty. That's the point of the faith, right? They believed that God would do these things. And in Abraham's life, then, we see the faith of Abraham. What specifically did God expect him to believe? Well, that he would make it to his destination safely, right? That's the first one. I'm going to make it over there. There's really one before that, which is God will show me where to go, because he leaves not yet knowing where he's going. He sort of has to be shown along the way. He's not going to get hit by a band of marauders. He's not going to get caught in a sandstorm is what it would be. Not going to get caught in a sandstorm. His camel's not going to break his leg and fall down a ravine. Like all of these things that I don't know if he's thinking about these things, you know, one after the other, but that's what he has to believe, that God is going to see him through his journey safely. He has to believe that there's going to be success in the new land. Okay, I'm going to get over there and I'm not going to starve. I'm going to figure out where to live. I'm going to figure out how to make a living. I'm going to figure out how to sustain my family, right? He has to believe that. A lot of times, we don't go through the process of specifically naming the things that I am expected to believe. We just have this general, vague, nebulous thing. I'm supposed to believe in God. I'm supposed to believe in the Bible. But what specifically in your life is God expecting you to believe? Not generic, not things that everybody is expected to believe, but you specifically. What about the future of your life does God expect you to have faith that he will help you with? It's going to be, some of the things are going to be the same for all of us. But there's some things specifically in your life, some problems maybe that you're having, or some difficulty, or some temptation, or a task that is before you that you are expected to do because of God's commands. What specifically do you have to believe will come to pass in order for you to do those things? That ultimately Abraham has to believe that this God speaking to him is trustworthy, which he obviously believes that because he goes. He believes that God exists and that he will reward those who seek him. Once Abraham got there, God asked him to have more faith, right? You're going to have a child. You're going to have the ability to raise that child in your old age. This child's going to live to adulthood. Like all these things that go into it, which we'll really get into more next week when we talk about the story in Genesis 22. Abraham is truly asked to step out, that phrase, step out on faith. To go and make the beginning steps of a journey that he can't possibly know the outcome of, except that God told him it'll be okay. Is that any different than what God asks us to do? Now, maybe you're not being asked to move 2,000 miles across the world. Maybe you are, I don't know. I hope not, because I want you to be here. But there are things in your life that you're expected to take the first step to make some sort of action on, and you don't know how it's going to work out because you can't read the future. But you're expected to take those first steps anyway because God has told you that he will be with you and that he will reward those who seek him. So how did Abraham do it? How did he have faith to go? Well, the Hebrew writer gives us some insight here. Hebrews 11:10, this phrase that we told you to think about. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. Now, again, if we think about the overall flow of Scripture, in the Hebrew writer, his original context, he's writing to these people, that phrase city immediately probably evokes the idea of Jerusalem, right? The holy city of Jerusalem. Of course, by the time the Hebrew writer is writing, that's no longer the case. Jerusalem's just a city, a normal city, like every other city. It's not the holy city anymore. But it was for a large stretch of time, in large part because of Abraham's actions. So maybe they're thinking about this idea of Jerusalem and the holy city, the city of foundations. Of course, that's over and done with. So what is the Hebrew writer thinking of here? He's not thinking about earthly Jerusalem, and he's not even ascribing that to Abraham. Abraham doesn't have any idea about Jerusalem that's going to come. What is Abraham thinking of? that God is going to establish a place for him to be. Now, maybe Abraham's thinking about an earthly place. The Hebrew writer certainly seems to indicate that Abraham is thinking about something more than that. We read in 13 through 16. These all. So who has he mentioned so far? Well, he's mentioned Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land from which they had gone out, in Abraham and Sarah's case, quite literally, the land that which they have gone out. Abel didn't do that. Enoch didn't really go on a large journey that we know of. Noah sort of did too, actually, right? Because Noah, all of the land was flooded, and so he had a new land. If they had been thinking of the land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. The Hebrew writer seems to be indicating that these people, Old Testament, ancient people, were thinking about things beyond this earth. Even though the original stories don't indicate that necessarily, of course, the Hebrew writer is inspired of God. He knows what was in their hearts and minds. That they were not just thinking about the physical, but thinking about things that were beyond that. The things that are unseen, the things that belong to the purview of God. By faith we understand that what is seen was made out of things which are not visible, because God has that eternal spiritual power. As it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, and this may be my favorite verse in the whole Bible. I think I've said that before. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, because he has prepared for them a city. Not Jerusalem, a heavenly city. Isn't that what he says? They desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. So Abraham embodies these verses most literally. He's literally looking for a better country. The story presented in Genesis, again, makes it seem like Abraham's just thinking about the physical, which maybe he was primarily. The Hebrew author really brings out that he's thinking about something more than that. And by his faith, then, he demonstrates that this world is not his home. Wherever God says, that's going to be his home, right? Wherever God sends him, whatever God does for him. It's not where he was born. It's not where he grew up. It's not where his family is. It's what God says it is. That's his home. Isn't that our home? I don't know. Doesn't matter how long you've lived here or somewhere else where you were born, where your family is. That's not your home. Where God establishes our city, that is our home. That heavenly country. So why does it say then that they died in faith not having received the things promised? Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah. Surely Abraham received his reward, right? We think about the reward that he received. Consider the promises again. I'm going to put them all up here. Go, I will give you a new homeland. You'll have a son. You'll have many descendants. You will bless all the nations. Those are the four main promises here. 3/4 of those did not happen in his lifetime. This didn't. Now, he did go and get to live in Canaan, but before he died, he was told, what? Your descendants will not live here. They'll have to go and be in Egypt for 400 years. So he knew that it wasn't going to happen in his lifetime. This promise that God made to him, he died not having received the things promised. And why was he able to have faith even so? Because he desired a heavenly country. Right? He believed in something beyond his immediate existence. Even though these things will not come to fruition until I'm dead and gone, Abraham still acted out of faith in God, that he would fulfill the promises that he had made. Even though Abraham wouldn't be around to see it, he believed that God would do it. When we build a church, build a fellowship and a family of God's people, we are doing so with the understanding that we want this to live beyond us, right? We want the fulfillment of this to be outside of my lifetime. I don't want this to just last so I can have the benefit and then when I'm dead and that's over. I want it to last beyond me because it belongs to that spiritual heavenly thing. He said all those things. So, we bring these verses back up. 11:6, without faith it is impossible to please him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. How did this play out in the life of Abraham? God talks to him and says, go do this thing. Well, he believes that God exists. He believes that that is God who's speaking to him. And he believes that God's going to reward him if he goes. And so he goes, not knowing the outcome. That is fundamentally how our faith should be. I believe in God and what he said, and I believe that if I do the things that God has said, there will be some reward. Maybe not in my lifetime, but there will be some reward nonetheless. And not just for me, but for the people that I bless in my life, right? The people that I can be a blessing to. Verse 16, therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God. I like this, really evokes the story of Job, doesn't it? The devil, of course, he goes into comes in with the sons of God. They're all presenting themselves in the throne room of God. They go up there and they're all doing whatever it is that they do up there. And the devil comes in too, and God's like, isn't Job so awesome? Isn't that what he does? That's kind of what he's saying here too. Isn't Abraham so awesome? Man, Abraham. Really glad he's one of mine. Isn't that what this is saying? Abraham is the father of faith because he gives us the model to follow. God is not ashamed of Abraham. Even though he made mistakes, even though he sinned, even though he's a liar at certain points, he's not ashamed of Abraham. He's not ashamed to be called his God. So we return to the questions we start with and we will conclude. What has God asked you to do that requires faith? Could be something in a relationship. Could be something in your job. Could be something with your family. Could be something in your life that you, some task that you have that you know you should do because of what God has said. What is that? What are you willing to do to accomplish that because you believe in God? What risks are you willing to take? What challenges are you willing to face because you believe that God exists and he rewards those who seek him? Abraham was willing to leave everything and go on this massive journey. What are you willing to do? What time frame are you willing to accept for God's blessings? Abraham knew it wouldn't happen in his lifetime. He knew it wouldn't even happen for 400 years. Some of it he did receive blessings immediately, but even then, from the time that he was told to go to the time he had Isaac, was decades. Are you willing to wait decades for the fulfillment of God's promises? You should be. If you believe in God, if you believe that he is eternal. And then we finally think of somebody in your own life who demonstrated that faith. Encourage them and draw encouragement from them. Because we're all facing these things together, right? You have your things that you're facing. I have my things that I'm facing. But ultimately, if we face it together, won't it be easier? Notice that Abraham did not go alone. Who did he take? He took Sarah, his wife, he took Lot, his nephew. They went together. Who can we draw strength from? Put yourselves in God's shoes for a minute as we conclude. Thinking about yourself. You're God and you're thinking about your life. I'm pretending to be God and I'm thinking about the life of Chris Watts. Would I be ashamed if Chris Watts claims to be a follower of God? Would God be ashamed when you claim to follow him? I hope the answer is no. I hope God can look at our lives and be proud that we claim to be his. I hope that's the case. How can we make that the case? We demonstrate the faith of Abraham and follow through on the things that God has asked us to do, even if we can't be certain of the outcome.